The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Ray Bjorkman. Ray is president of Birch Grove Consulting. Ray, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thanks, Roger.
Yeah, we're in the dog days of summer now, right?
We are.
Towards the, and moving into the fall shortly. And, you know,
when you say dog days, are you referring to Congress?
Well, they're out on recess, but I guess I understand the Senate's keeping pro forma open or whatnot, so
yeah,
there can't be
any
recess appointments or something like that. I read that recently too. So I guess maybe they're on vacation, but maybe they're not. They're back, you know, talking to their constituents anyway. But we digress. So Ray, today, as per usual, your information with regard to the budget and what's going on is great stuff, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today. And so we're going to talk about the president's budget, you know, what's going on the Hill, and where things you think are headed and what companies need to think about. That's a lot for the show. But one thing I wanted to start with, and since I've been doing the show, this is the first, circumstance where we've had a transition, from one administration to another administration. I started the show back in 2011. So it's interesting times, nonetheless, but just from a budgetary perspective, when you're going through one of these transitions, what are the key features of it, just sort of the circumstances around it that people need to keep in mind and companies who deal with the government?
Well, particularly when it's transitioned from one party to another.
That really
makes it very intriguing, because the party who wins the election really is supposed to be establishing its policies and articulating what it intends to do for major programs and the like. And I think we've all admitted, even the Trump administration's admitted, they didn't really think that hard about many of those changes. But there was generally policies that were talked about during the campaign about overregulation, policies against too much foreign involvement, policies against this and that and the other, which became, of course, the formation of the Trump budget. And what we saw this cycle, particularly in this transition, was because the administration wasn't that prepared to really articulate what programs, what effects, what spending levels would occur, they put out the blueprint.
Yeah, that short document first. That's right.
Which gave us an indication of what direction they were headed. And it was very soon after that that Mulvaney came on board as director of OMB. And everybody knew that he was very much a fiscal hawk from his experiences and his what he showed, what he manifested in the House. And so everybody knew there was going to be a lot of cuts. And, of course, even before Trump, White House had nominated a lot of the key members of the cabinet and other principals. He was already saying those agencies are going to get cut by this much, that much, and so on. And so we were all shivering a little bit, what does this mean, particularly for contractors, and anticipating it probably was going to be very significant. But then when we saw the details of the budget come out, we saw many of those general policy statements and particularly the numbers, the target numbers that were kind of set in the blueprint, we saw them manifest in the details of the budget. Now, that's kind of a roundabout way of looking at your question, but what typically happens is that there is significant amount of momentum from the previous administration because the details of the budget were actually engineered back as far as April of last year, over a year ago,
right,
already, yeah. and to prepare for the details of working through developing the budget for this year. So there's a certain amount of momentum that comes from the previous administration. Curiously, in all my years of looking in detail at the budget, I've never seen a incoming administration, even a party change, make this kind of change radically.
Radically, yeah.
As they have. And so the momentum is kind of stopped, but remember, we've got, you know, three major branches of government, and so there's a certain amount of congressional inertia.
Mm-hmm.
There's inertia for even some changes at the rank and file levels of the executive branch. You know, so, you know, I was not too scared about the major cuts that were being proposed, but, you know, they're going to happen, and it is going to affect contractors.
Right. Well, yeah, it's interesting, that observation, this administration, because, you know, just as I understand it, and he's explained it to me, is that in the past, is that, you know, there it takes, you know, really about 18 months, let's say, or something that for the budget folks, you know, the vision for the new incoming administration, particularly when it's a change in parties, to take place. And that sort of budget on autopilot with all the momentum built up over the, you know, year and, you know, 8 months or whatever it is in advance of, you know, the election and the, ultimately the change in administrations just sort of continues. And there might be changes typically around the margins, but this time it's just, that's not just the case, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when you looked at the Obama-Bush transition, you know, certainly Obama was inheriting the last Bush budget, and you could see where a lot of that momentum was in place. Things didn't really change too much, but we were under an enormous economic crisis
at the time. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so on top of what was already sort of in the rolling budget from Bush, we had the Stimulus Act on top of that, which added a lot more spending. So it was kind of a different approach. We don't see that now, even though the president's talked about infrastructure changes and talked about some other major investments, even in defense. But we didn't see any immediate appropriations action regarding those changes, which it's just the nature of this particular White House. And so now we are seeing them because the Hill is being responsive or responding to, in some form or fashion, to what the Trump administration has put on the table.
Right. Okay, well, with that in mind, let's talk about what the Trump administration has put on the table and start taking a look at the president's budget. So just big picture, you know, the big takeaways, and then we can maybe talk about some of the key specifics.
Well, of course, the budget is worth trillions and trillions of dollars.
Be careful now, okay? No, go ahead. Okay.
Yeah,
it's going to be huge.
Yeah. And, you know, again, a lot of that comes from momentum, and there are lots of mandatory programs that are going to be very hard to change. You know, so when the Trump administration is coming in and said we got to cut spending, which I would agree, you know, even though I'm sure contractor clients aren't going to be too happy about that, but I agree, yes, spending does need to be cut to some degree, trimmed back.
That could always turn into more opportunities for contractors if the view is that, you know, contractors could be more efficient and effective, right? There's that flip side of it too,
well,
right?
Yeah, there is. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the built-in opportunities about these radical changes. But, you know, I try to look at what is this real effect going to be on the contractor support, the contractor industry, you know, that supports the government. And when you look at the net of it, even in the details of the budget that the Trump administration finally put on the table, the president's budget, you know, the net effect on addressability was about a 3% increase in contract
Wait
spending.
A second. How can that be?
How can that be? Well, because there was a lot of money being requested for defense. And that's where a very significant amount of the changes occurred. If you look at services alone, both defense and civilian agency, contract services, you know, going down about 9%. So, not good, but that's the budget request.
Right. So and they must be, they're buying more stuff.
More stuff. Potentially, probably. More stuff.
Yeah, and Ray, we're already on the first break, so when we come back, we'll continue to, to take a, to dissect the president's proposed budget. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He's president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and we're talking about the budget, the president's budget. Yeah, we're going to talk about what's going on the Hill with regard to the budget as well as we move, as we continue this discussion this morning, but this afternoon, excuse me. And then, but right now, let's continue with the budget. We just got into it towards the end of the last segment, Ray, the president's proposed budget. So I'm just going to turn it over to you and talk about the key features, overarching goals, and then we could talk about some winners and losers.
Okay, thanks. When you look at any kind of president's budget, it fundamentally is a political statement of policy, a political statement. And up until recently, the budget preparation instructions that came out of OMB openly admitted that.
Right.
Which, that's true. I mean, that's what it is. And this is, the executive branch asking Congress to appropriate dollars for certain programs.
Consistent with their policies, which are, based on their political philosophy, right? It's all that. Yeah, absolutely.
And so you can look at any specific program or specific agencies, and you can see how the policy is being made manifest, in the budget. And even though I've said that for many years, it's a political statement, I have never, ever seen the level of politicization in the budget that I have in this particular cycle. It's fascinating. And so, I saw these phrases occurring time and
maybe
again.
Maybe it's just plain language, right?
Well, it's plain language,
like going to plain language far or whatever, right?
Oh, no, heaven forbid.
We don't want to get into that.
So it's really intriguing. And I got some of the statements here. Here's one. This is, quote, as part of the administration's plans to move the nation towards fiscal responsibility, to redefine the proper role of the federal government, and to prioritize rebuilding the military and making critical investments in the nation's security, the budget proposes to eliminate funding for several independent agencies. That occurred 17 times. In a 1,400-page document, the one that I analyze in detail every year. And there were several other ones. And to even use the expression, in a time of belt tightening, I've never, ever seen that kind of thing in the budget. And, of course, it's really a very clear statement of a policy that there needs to be restraint on spending in general.
Right. And that's, get your thoughts, because when you quote that, and I immediately thought of, the reorganization effort and the OMB memo that was issued on that. When you talk about the redefine the proper role of government, you can see they've thought this out in that sense, that now that they are issuing things, and that, there's a lot in that document about agencies identifying their core functions and functions that they shouldn't be doing, or, and you get into federalism, like should it be done at some things at the state, that
correct,
the federal, there's all that in there, and seeking departments and agencies to identify and sort of prioritize and should there, shouldn't be doing those things. So that's some consistency there. That as a management maven and budget guy, you must feel that's
Yes.
That's appropriate, right?
Yeah, I mean, not even the guidance coming from OMB regarding staffing and looking at missions and responsibilities was even before Bulvaney came on board. It is some degree of consistency there. You know, and then because the campaign talked about cutting and using a term even draining a swamp, because of cutting programs, there were here's another quote. The budget proposes to eliminate several independent agencies, including blank, as part of the administration's plans to move the nation towards fiscal responsibility, 20 times that occurred. And there were many, many small agencies, some which have, in my mind, outlived their usefulness,
yeah,
but there's still a congressional constituency for them to protect them. And there's like one was in a large department, and I looked at the proposal taking a $36 million agency and cutting it down to $6 million. And the reason the $6 million was, we're going to pay somebody to shut it down.
Right. Sure.
Few government employees, but, contractors also to do an orderly shutdown of the agency. Well, when Congress sort of responded to that, they said, no, we're actually going to give them $1 million more.
Really? That's kind of interesting. That's a great, you bring up these quotes they just sort of get you to thinking. And it would seem to me that it's a timely thing, and folks should be doing it as part of the budget process routinely is we're in the 21st century now. We have technology has changed the world. The world is not the same place it was when you and I were like growing up or whatever. And to the extent there's little agencies or functions that existed in the 60s or 70s, are they even relevant to the nation anymore? Or society? And should, is there other things that we should be doing with that money, or should it be cut? It seems to me that's a healthy exercise.
And even consolidation of those missions, and to say, there are some missions that are no longer as important. Nobody's going to really argue, I don't think anybody can fairly argue that a mission is no longer appropriate. I mean, there's not a bureau for buggy whips, so
right,
it's not
right,
quite
sure.
that bad.
Right. But that's the analogy I'm thinking of in a certain sense, like how things have changed, that there's other issues or challenges that may take priority, right?
Yes. And just to the point of possibly consolidating, which the administration actually talked about in the budget, there are some small agencies that probably don't need to be separate independent agencies anymore with their own overhead.
Right.
That function could be part of a larger department.
Right. Absorbing that, some of that overhead, or sharing it across, could actually get a better return on investment, right?
Yeah, but it's still going to affect contractors, because when you have an independent, small independent agency, they have independent overhead typically. There's not much in the way of shared services. It exists, but so, it possibly can be pretty hard effect on a contractor. That's one of the downsides of it.
Right. So they've identified 20 times, used some of this language about, cutting and then some cases eliminating entities. So let's just talk big, who are the winners and who are the losers? If you want to talk a little bit about the defense increase that they proposed, and then talk about some of the other areas where they may be taking a different view.
Yep. And one of the points of analysis here, and this is sort of to address to contractors, it's like, if you see the handwriting on the wall about winners and losers, how are you going to pivot? How are you going to pivot your orientation to be more aligned? I won't say take advantage of, but be more aligned with the potential spending changes. And certainly defense is where a lot of money was being pumped into it, and the net of contractor addressable spending, the president's budget was plus 7% for defense.
For DOD, yeah.
Yeah, for defense. Well, and defense kind of arguably goes into Homeland Security. You just
Department of Energy too, or
There's for the National Nuclear Security Administration.
Yeah.
There is defense spending for nuclear reactors, for naval ships, and a few other things, for weapons. And you know, Homeland Security, you know, is part of this broader national security environment. You know, and Homeland Security, Homeland generally, because that not only affects Department of Homeland Security, but it affects DOD kind of in a sort of a side picture. It affects Department of Agriculture, affects Health and Human Services. There's a lot of effect for Homeland Security spending.
Almost, right? Or not? Ripple or is effect, that right the right term?
But those other agencies actually have Homeland Security functions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, to protect the food chain,
right,
or
yes,
protect health, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so, that's like another 5% increase.
Right. Well, we're going to have to continue to dissect this budget, proposed budget, in the next segment. Ray, we're already up on the break. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting. And, it's that, we do this every year, Ray. We talk about the budget, president's proposed budget, what's going to happen to it. And towards the second half of the last segment, we started talking a little bit about winners and losers and increases. You touched on DOD and its increase. And I just want to, we'll just open it up, and you can continue on that path.
Sure, happy to do that. Okay, and a lot of this is going to change, but again, we're talking about the president's budget, what the White House has requested Congress appropriate. And if you look at the details there, and you get down to the biggest losers and the biggest winners, you look at again reflection of policy. And you can see where non-defense research is an area that's generally targeted. Now, you can think about NIH. You can think about EPA. You can think about Department of Energy, where there is a lot of spending on things that are non-defense related, and some which have to do with green programs, with energy efficiency. And you see, specifically a lot of those programs as separate programs, not just agencies, are being cut, at least in the proposal, being cut.
Why is that, again, when you talk about it being a political statement, is it reflection of the view that those things are more appropriately done in the private sector or just?
Well, in some cases, yes. But in these major cases, when you talk about non-defense research, some of that's private sector, but it's also thinking about green programs. It's this administration and its policy questions the validity of science. Okay. And, I know that's a politically charged statement to make itself, but I think that there's enough evidence and enough concern from the scientific community where a lot of this non-defense research is done. Think about effect on weather, which then therefore has an effect on agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the details of NOAA, you look at details of Agriculture Research Service, and you can see where those cuts or trimming or consolidation in some cases is being affected to create that. And then broadly, there's regulatory reform. So anything that is a strongly regulatory regulation generating organization is also under policy subject to substantial cuts. Okay, number one is EPA programs and EPA science and technology, which are two separate line items within EPA. We're talking, 60, 50% cut in those particular line items affecting contractors. This is contractor effect. That's pretty serious. And, we heard broadly, even back in the the budget blueprint days back in February that the intention was to cut spending in EPA by roughly a third. Well, you know, it just so happens it affects contractors more than it affects the civil service employees.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, and certainly some grants programs, and there's some other kinds of mandatory spending for things like underground storage tanks. You know, a lot of those things can't be directly affected. So we're talking about really a discretionary budget, things that where a lot of contract spending does occur. You know, some of the other ones, Department of Labor, Office of Federal Contract Compliance. When you think about what happened late in the Obama administration, where there were a lot of executive orders regarding protection of certain workforce elements, protection of the workplace.
There were, you know, you can think in the government contracting context, the fair pay and safe workplaces,
yes. Yep.
You know, executive order, then the rulemaking that was out there that's
yep.
now, you know, gone. And some people call that the blacklisting rule, obviously.
Yeah.
So, you know, depending on your political perspective, you could see where they might target that one, I guess.
Right? Yes. And so that particular part of Department of Labor is Department of Labor is supposed to be doing workforce development, developing jobs, finding out who needs to be cultivated, what parts of the economy need to be cultivated to increase jobs and occupational success and all that. But, you know, they also have a regulatory basis in Office of Federal Contract Compliance. You know, the Trump administration is asking for about a minus 56%. So like a 56% cut in contract spending for that thing. Now, you know, is that going to happen? Well, okay, the Congress has to decide whether it's going to go that far.
Right, right. Yeah. So are there, and when you look at, are there other winners? Let's talk about some of the good news for the contractors. Other winners that, you know, we talked a little bit about DOD, and a lot of that increase is going to be for stuff as opposed to services.
Yes.
As I understand it. Are there other, areas where the administration is, you know, is made a priority by, you know, providing additional money or not cutting things?
Yeah, when you look at something like Department of State, okay, you know, it's got Tillotson gives a very different kind of philosophy, and the Trump administration wants to cut back a lot of foreign involvement. But when it comes to international narcotics control and law enforcement, which is part of the Department of State functions, we're talking about a contractor increase about 28% in those line items. So, you know, you can't just look generally at a large department. You got to look down at the sub-agency level and you'd be able to see that. So, yeah, DOD, there's major changes in Department of Homeland Security. Just about every one of the sub-agencies within Homeland Security, TSA, you know, looking about a 30% increase in contract spend. And that isn't even necessarily reflecting possible privatization of the airport security function,
mm-hmm.
Which could also obviously increase that particular contract spend line. You know, so there's some intriguing things in in Department of Education,
okay,
which is a politically charged department,
yes,
in terms of what their policies are doing now. One of the sub agencies, which is the Office of Vocational and Adult Education, is proposed to get, and this is again contract spend, 132% increase in contract spend. Now, why is that? Okay, think about workforce development, adult education, vocational education. You know, on how do we change our workforce in the economy we have today? How do we take those elements of the workforce who have not been well employed,
right,
and improve their possibilities,
mm-hmm.
their opportunities?
Yeah. That's interesting that that's recognized and actually investments are proposed to be made in that area.
And so, and there are a couple of places in Department of Labor where there's also some increases, you know, as opposed to Office of Federal Contract Compliance, which of course is regulatory.
Right, sure.
You know, we want to, you know, sort of what Steve Bannon talks about, you know, the sort of the catharsis. We'll talk about that in a while.
Okay.
But, you know, a deconstruction of this large governmental machine. And, you know, you do it by, in part, by just cutting dollars, but also cutting back on regulatory, what is perceived as regulatory overreach.
Well, on that note, too, we're speaking of overreach, we are already up on the next break, Ray. So when we come back, I guess we can, we'll put this in further context and talk about, you know, what the next steps are and the congressional reaction to it and where it all may lead. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and we're talking budget, president's budget, proposed budget, a political statement, right, Ray?
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, this segment is the last one, so let's talk about sort of, you know, what the next steps are, where the congressional approach to this, congressional reaction to it, and where, in, you know, a little bit of your crystal ball, what you see going to happen going into the fall. So, Ray, I turn it over to you. So, is it, what's going on the Hill? You know, and how is this process all going to play out?
Okay, one way that I've looked at the way that these two processes, the budget request and the appropriations process, interface for this particular first round in the Trump administration, I call it catharsis followed by hysteresis. And catharsis, when
they're
you...
They're big words for me, man.
I know, all I know. Right. And they gotta, and I don't know Greek either.
Okay.
I was at a Greek dinner one night and at a Greek church, and the server said, as we would say in Greece, bon appetit.
Okay. Okay. Well,
so,
there you go.
So however you want to mix it up, you know, so catharsis and hysteresis.
Okay.
All right. It's a catharsis because it's an attempt to deconstruct the government, make it much smaller, and get rid of what is perceived as being overreach, being waste, being unnecessary federal programs that have no federal purpose, which is actually another phrase in the budget. And then the hysteresis follows that, because when you gut things, you know, and there's a countervailing power here called Congress with the power of the purse and appropriations, that there's a certain degree of hysteresis. So it's not going to go quite as far. And we all kind of knew that, you know, that here's this president's budget. It's asking for very severe cuts in some agencies. And then, you know, how's that, as Congress going to react to that? And even though it's a Republican Congress, House and Senate, you know, we know that there are heads in there that have more continuity, that want to keep momentum from some previous programs and missions going, and certainly not have to disrupt too many pieces of legislation, statutes on the books. So when you look at an agency like EPA, you know, which I call kind of the poster child of this catharsis hysteresis, and with the Trump administration requesting roughly a third cut in that agency, you know, the effects on the contractors, contract spending, which is many, many different kinds of contract spending within that agency. And, you know, the kinds of proposed cuts were going to create about anywhere from a third to 50% in cuts. And the effects on contract spending were even stronger, like 40% to 85% cut in contract spending.
Yeah.
And you think about it, okay, if you're going to really downsize an agency, what's going to go first? Are you going to fire all your civilians, government civilians, employees? Probably not.
pretty hard to do anyway, right?
Some people think it's hard to do.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and
the perception then is it's hard to do. Okay.
So this budget gets into the House and the Senate, and the House has at least come up now with their explanation of what their planned appropriations are for EPA. And the hysteresis effect has gone into play. And so while the administration was looking for hundreds of millions of dollars, it's like only about $180 million that the House actually wants to take out of last year's budget. So reducing the current contract or current spend overall. And the net effect on contractors now is that it's about a 15% to 30% cut, as opposed to 40 to 85% cut on contract spend. So it's not great, but it's better than it could have been.
Right.
And, you know, Congress has also said...
Is that the House version?
Right.
So the Senate could be, you know, just looking at the players, it'd probably be even smaller cuts coming.
I think so.
Yeah, when you negotiate it all out, right?
I think so. And, of course, that has to go before some sort of joint activity between the House and the Senate before it goes to final bill. So we'll have to see how that sorts out. But, you know, here's the House, which is predominantly Republican, has many of the fiscal conservatives in it, saying to the administration, hey, next time you come and give us all these cuts that you're talking about, justify each of them. Give us some explanation of why you're doing this. We can't support it if you're not going to do that.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons for sort of the backlash or hysteresis effect. Another aspect in it is that Congress has actually given EPA and the previous administration lots of very specific direction. And they're saying, oh, by the way, you have a science board, which we know was at some risk in this administration. And they're saying, by the way, in the science board, you got to get your scientists to update the policy based on what we've told you before. So that's part of that momentum, but it's also pushback, it's backlash, it's hysteresis. It's got an effect. And you know, as a result, it's not going to be as bad as what we thought or what we saw in February.
Right. So in that case, when you're talking about the science board, they're really saying, hey, we've given you guidance with regard to sort of your operating sort of vision, and you haven't revised that. And you could see that if it's a Republican, you know, Congress and a Democrat administration, not exactly, you know, jumping to like execute on that, but to even figure out where you're going from a budgetary perspective, you know, I guess Congress is rightfully saying update that vision, whatever, you know, based on what we've talked about. Then we'll talk about money, right?
In a certain sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in there.
Yeah.
And there, you know, and Congress in the language supporting the House bill, you know, they're saying, hey, EPA is really, really important. Of course, it was a Republican president who put it in place.
Great. Yeah. Right.
Just kind of interesting position. But, you know, they're saying, you know, EPA is protecting the environment, is protecting us as citizens, is protecting our economy. You know, and yeah, we agree that there's probably been significant overreach, and we're happy to be, you know, cutting back on the regulatory overreach. And, you know, I kind of think it got a little out of hand too, personally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's also saying, by the way, this is still an important function, so don't compromise it too much.
Right, right. So, you know, we've only got a few minutes left, so let's talk a little bit about where we are in the process and what we see going in the fall, continuing resolutions. Is that going to be the order of the day?
Gee, sort of what do per you usual? Think, Roger?
Well, I have to ask the obvious questions or to get the obvious answers out, right, for the listeners, right? So,
yeah, absolutely. I don't see that happening. You know, the House and Senate have tried to grapple with things like healthcare reform, you know, and hasn't been very successful. That took energy away from the appropriations process.
Took energy away from everything.
Yeah,
right?
Like everything. You know, infrastructure changes, you know, other tax reform, all those kinds of things, immigration reform that the administration would like to do. So, yes, the subcommittees of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees and the Senate Armed Services and House Armed Services Committees have been doing their thing.
Yeah.
You know, and we're always kind of comforted in the fact that both the House and Senate are pretty good about getting their National Defense Authorization Acts out.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a sense of what that spending is going to be. And, oh, by the way, not only did, you know, the administration ask for significant increases in defense spending at the expense of many civilian agencies, the Senate, SASC and HASC, Armed Services Committees, actually increased the contract spending by a few percentage points.
Beyond what the administration
yeah. requested. Right. Now, we're going to have to see how that sorts out in the actual appropriations process, but I'd say generally the administration is getting pretty much what it's going to be asked and what it's asked for. Now, you know, that risk of not only there's still the ceiling, too.
Right, the budget debt ceiling. The debt ceiling issue,
but there's still the sequestration potential because of the Budget Control Act. And, you know, right now we're kind of in a situation where if the House and the Senate are adding money back to the civilian agencies, we're talking about another busted budget.
Right.
And possibly sequestration, unless they can figure out a wiggle room, like maybe more overseas contingency operations, you know, to kind of get around that. It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, but because that has been sorted out, appropriations processes are not done, and at least one of the arms of Congress is really on real recess, it ain't going to happen by 30th of September.
Right, yeah.
So, yes, we're going to see another continuing resolution.
And you think budget, the debt ceiling, that'll be raised? Do you think it'll be?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't see anybody, I mean, it's too, I mean, and especially after the healthcare.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they've got, you know, if they can't do those things, like.
Okay. Right. I mean, there's so much wrapped into, it's not just administrative governmental programs, but there's tax revenues have to be considered. There are tax credits have to be considered. There are many, many things, and hopefully healthcare could have been sorted out before administration and Congress start tackling tax reform.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, all that's intertwined.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really a Gordian knot.
Yeah. Well, on that pleasant note, we do have to end the show. I want to thank my guest today, Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.